the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Hi, everyone, and Happy New Year. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this year's first program of Lifetime Income.
And I'm John Loeffler, and since it is the new year, this is when everybody makes New Year's resolutions. I have made a profound New Year's resolution that I think I'll be able to keep, and that is I'm not going to make any New Year's resolutions. So far, it's,
You've been successful.
I have been very successful. I'm very proud of myself. It's been easy to keep this one. So, anyway, maybe it's time that as we start the year, we're going to talk about the idea of whipping yourself financially into shape, or at least getting into shape. Whipping always sounds like it's a huge project or something like that. But that's what we want to cover here on this first program of the new year, making a sober assessment of where you are.
You know, it was rather interesting. I do the same thing each year. I have a planning calendar. I set my goals for the year. The interesting thing about it, I was doing a little research for the program today, and John, 8% of people that make New Year's resolutions actually achieve them. And then I started to get into, when did this tradition actually start? When did we start doing this? Was this something that was American tradition? Was this something that went elsewhere around the world? And it was funny because the tradition goes back to Babylonian times, where at the beginning of the year, it was a time to pay back your debts. During Roman era, it was a time where you made promise to the gods you were going to do certain things. And, you know, when you think about it, why do we do this? Well, you know, after you get done with the holidays, the new year, you sort of reflect back and look back at the year that just transpired. You know, what went on during the year? What were you happy about? Your disappointments, your successes. But it's really a time for reflection at the beginning of the year. And it's amazing because I know in the financial business, it is that time of the year when people most focus on their financial well-being. And maybe part of that is we're forced to do that once a year because April 15th, we all have to file, at least here in the U.S., we have to file our income tax return. So we're thinking about taxes. And when we're thinking about taxes, we're getting 1099s on dividends and interest and putting all those facts together. But it's also a time that people say, well, you know, I wasn't happy the way things went last year, or I haven't really achieved where I want to be. And so we reflect and people make these resolutions.
Well, you know, when we make resolutions, they're often well-intentioned. A lot of people do this in the area of dieting that just get frustrated over time and they decide to make another swat at it. And so they make a lot of resolutions. But what happens is, given the modern society in which we live, is we're sort of creatures of habit and routine. And unless you have a certain amount of force to push yourself out of your routine and stay out of there long enough to get your resolution done, you tend to fall back into habits.
You know, it was rather interesting. During the Christmas holidays, I got a Christmas present. I got several books from my son, and one of them was called The Power of Habit, Why We Do What We Do in Life and Business. And they talked about becoming successful or overcoming things, whether it's drug addiction, alcoholism, any kind of things, or even becoming a better football team. And what happens is it begins with a cue. Something happens, and that cue sparks a routine. We respond or we do something in a certain way. And as a result of that routine, there is a reward, satisfaction for eating food, drinking a nice glass of wine, losing weight, achieving a particular goal. And what they really talked about in success, what they've found studying altering effects in terms of achieving outcomes, was to change the routine. In other words, there are habits that we form in life, and those habits are formed and sparked by various cues that we respond to. And if we want to change that, because those habits are always there, we have to create new habits, which involves changing the routine in order to achieve the same reward. So by altering our routines, there's a greater chance of success.
Well, here we are, as we've said, the beginning of the year. And if we're going to start talking about establishing good habits or new ones, one would be getting into financial shape. That may be getting out of debt, coming up with a better retirement plan, structuring your taxes in a better and more efficient means. All of these things are part of it, and it does take a little effort to sit down and figure out what you're going to do. So if we had to come up with a really effective battle plan for getting into financial shape, preferably one that has steps that we can follow, what would that look like?
Well, you know, this may sound so simple, but when taking a look at various financial goals or getting into financial shape, no matter what it is, or even, you know, physical shape, step one is you got to identify a financial goal. What's interesting is statistics show you are more likely to succeed if you set a specific goal that, let's say, have several characteristics. Number one, it's measurable. Whatever the goal is, if it's financial goal, I want to retire, or I want to have X amount of dollars put aside, or I want to be able to save X amount of dollars per month. So it's got to be specific. It's got to be measurable. And number two, it's got to be attainable. Everybody would say, gosh, I want to retire. Well, I want to retire next year. That may not be realistic. And it's got to be relevant. And there are a number of factors, as simple as this may sound, it's really the most important step you can take when you begin this process, because you need to know a question: why you want to accomplish this goal. Simple one, retirement. You may be 20, you may be 30, 40, 50, whatever the age is, you need to know why you want to accomplish a particular goal, let's say retirement, at a specific time. And there has to be a what. Specifically, what are you going to try to accomplish? Having a certain net worth, being able to retire at a certain age, be able to have a certain lifestyle. So you need to know specifically what you're trying to accomplish. Another factor that goes into your goal, and especially when we get to specificity, is when. When do you want to accomplish this? If you're trying to get out of debt, what is the time frame? If you want to retire, at what age? If you want to have a certain net worth, when do you want to accomplish that? And then finally, you need to have a program of how you're going to accomplish this. So you really need to put these things together, and it really starts identifying a financial goal. And the real key to success here, once again, is it has to be specific, has to be measurable, has to be attainable, and has to be irrelevant to your current situation.
Okay, so that's number one. Step two?
I guess step two kind of relates to this, and that's sort of putting your goal into perspective. You want to understand the big picture. You need to know, for example, where you stand currently. Let's say that your goal was, since this program deals with retirement planning, your goal was to retire. Let's say you're age 40, you want to retire at age 65. So you need to look at where do you stand currently, looking at where you are now and where you want to go. And John, that entails doing things that every single corporation, every successful business does each year. As we know, if you're an investor, you're looking at investing in stocks. You look at the income statement of the company you're investing in. What are their revenues? What are their expenses? You take a look at the balance sheet. What kind of financial shape are they in? Are they heavily indebted? Are they strong financially? And this is really taking a snapshot of where your life is financially currently. It doesn't mean that's where you're going to stay, but if you're starting out to go someplace, you start at a place of where you are, and then you look forward to the destination where you want to go to. And part of that is analyzing your finances, and it's actually one of the more difficult things that people have doing, because, you know, a lot of times there's sort of a fearful effect that takes a place. I really don't want to look at my finances income statement because I'm really going to find out how messed up my finances are. So you need to analyze your finances. And the big task that we have, at least I found in my 35, 36 years in this business, is really getting people to take a snapshot of their finances. And it's that fear effect. It's really forcing people to realize how bad or how good their financial circumstances are. And I think, and many times by going through this process, it's almost like a catharsis. Oh, gosh, I didn't realize I was that in good a shape. Or, Wow. Yeah, I sort of suspected that I wasn't in the best financial condition. Or you realize, wow, I'm really not doing that well, but I see a lot of things that I can improve here. So step two is really understanding the big picture in understanding, okay, I'm here right now, but this is not where I want to stay. I want to be someplace else and go someplace else. And this is what I'm going to have to do. And the first step, like any good corporation that's well managed, is coming up with an income statement to know what your revenues are, what your expenses are, and a balance sheet that basically says, this is my financial shape.
Well, and I would suspect if we're looking at financial condition, obviously we're talking about both an income statement and a balance sheet, but you really need to track where the money is going. That tends to be one of the big issues, is the outflow, and that would be your first area, is to trim that off.
Yeah, and it's very easy to do, and I think we have suggested this a lot of times with our clients who have never done this before, is you start a journal. Journal your expenses for a 7-day period. And I think if you look back, you will basically find it very surprising. One of the things that I just did this exercise, I think I did this last year, maybe it was the year before, and I wanted to track inflation. You know, because we hear figures about CPI and we hear different inflation figures, the Fed's own inflation figures that they use, which are different than the CPI widely reported in the financial media. And I just wanted to track, and we had check registers, and I wanted to take a look at what were we spending on the things that we spent currently compared to what we were spending and what it was costing 5 years ago and 10 years ago. And we keep our check registers for tax purposes. And it was amazing, John, just taking a look at, for example, since I do the grocery shopping, what I was spending on groceries, and we've been empty nesters for quite some time, what I was spending on groceries 5 years ago and 10 years ago, what a shock. What I was spending on gas, what our utility bills were, and just tracking those expenses over time, I think was really revealing. And I could see firsthand, you know, when it comes to basic expenses, we've had an inflationary cycle, even though the widely reported CPI has been less inflationary. So I think tracking your expenses over a 7-day period, and if you could do 7 days, then tracking it for a month, and then taking a look at like a year ago. What were you spending money in January of 2016 compared to what are you spending money in January 2017? And I think if you go through that exercise, you're going to find it very revealing in terms of, it'll tell you much about the way you operate and the way you spend money and your lifestyle.
And once you realize how much is spending outwards, shall we say, you do finally have to come to the B word, and I'm talking about budget. The hardest thing that people have to do is on the fly, assuring that they stay on budget.
It really is. And this is probably one of the hardest things to do is, number one, take financial stock where you are today. The other thing is coming up with a budget. It's just something that people don't like doing. But what it does is it enforces discipline. And if you want to be successful in achieving your financial goals, you have to create a habit and alter your routine. Alter your spending routines, your savings routines, your investment routines. All of those three fit together. And to achieve those goals, you are going to be changing your habits. You're going to be altering and doing something different than what you do commonly today. And that really gets down to putting a budget, knowing where that money goes. And it forces you to be honest with yourself. And quite honestly, if you want to be successful in the future, you're going to have to track where you're heading. And it's also can be function, as I talked about, forming successful habits. Part of the thing of successful habits is the reward. In other words, if you are successful, you do things, you diet, you eat better, healthy foods, you exercise. The reward is seeing a weight loss. You can get on a scale and weigh yourself. It's the same thing with budgeting and achieving financial goals. You can look at the end of the year and say, wow, this year, my net worth went up, my expenses went down, my savings went up, I had better returns on investments, I'm putting aside more money, and it helps you track how successful you are in achieving your goals. It's just like whenever I take a trip and drive in my car, if I'm driving someplace, driving to Arizona or something, I have a GPS on my monitor. It tells me my time of arrival, my distance, the miles traveled. It's the same thing you're doing with your budget. You're taking a look at where you're spending your money, understanding where the outflow goes, and then taking corrective action so you can put aside extra money and save and invest to get to your goal.
So assuming all of these, that number one, you've looked at your finances, then two, you've set some goals based on that, three, tracked expenses, four, put together a budget, and where do we step from there?
Step five is sort of the implementation of getting you to your goals. It's saving. You're hoping to save more money and investing. And you're going to get that by following the budget. And you may have a number of goals, depending on where your age, what your financial situation. It may be paying down more debt. It may be saving, putting more money away. For example, you may be contributing to a 401k plan, but you're not maxing it out. And as a result of not maxing it out, you're not getting the full tax deductions. You are putting less money aside, so that means you're further away from your retirement goals. But also, you may be in a situation where you work for a company. The more that you put in your 401k, there's matching contributions. So it's not just your money that you're saving and putting aside, but you're getting matching contributions from your employer. And John, this is something I think is going to be really important as we get to the end of this decade and the next decade. And it's one of the things we talked on the forecast show, that one of the things the incoming administration is facing, unlike its predecessors, they are entering office with the economy not in a recession, with the Fed tightening interest rates, and the fact the president-elect inherits a $20 trillion national debt. And in the future, that's going to place a limitation in terms of any president's ability to enact legislation, whether it's spending or tax cuts. But we're also entering a period where we're going to be seeing benefits reduced. For many of you that have been on Obamacare, you are seeing your premiums rise and escalate by an average of 25%. Hopefully you don't live in Arizona. Over the holidays, one of my friends who came to stay with us was talking about his son's friend. They live in Arizona. They were paying $700 on the exchange for their Obamacare policy. I forget it was the silver or what plan it was. Those premiums went up to $1,500 this year. So we're going to be going through a period where you're going to see the government cover less of your medical expenses, which means that dime is going to be coming out of your pocket. And they're going to cover less when it comes to retirement. John, I think you call it the great reneging.
Yeah, that's what I refer to, as you said, as the great reneging, because politicians run on certain platforms and then they have to renege on promises they have made, because it's not possible to achieve all of the things that you hear said during political campaigns. And that's actually true of where our government is, too. You know, if you look at the fact that, just as you predicted, Jim, with the president being sworn in this week, that the debt will be at $20 trillion. We've been saying that by the time Mr. Obama left office, we'd be at $20 trillion. Well, sooner or later, they're going to have to renege on promises that they've been making.
And the gist of all of this is, if you want to take a look at the government covering less of expenses, whether it's medical or income for your retirement, it means you're going to have to become more self-reliant. And this gets back to these goal settings of getting into financial shape. You need to save and invest more and invest appropriately. And the amazing thing about this is there is no magic formula or miracle to achieving these goals. I mean, it's the magic of compounding. And it's obvious the sooner you start putting money aside, the easier it becomes to achieve those goals. And I've used this example before, but it really illustrates the point of getting it to financial shape and beginning as early as possible, because it becomes less onerous in terms of achieving those financial goals. And let's just take a simple example. You're wanting to retire, and when you retire, you want $1 million. Who would have thought $1 million really isn't that much today when you think about the income that $1 million produces today compared to, let's say, 15, 16 years ago? $1 million today, if you were in a safe bond, like a government bond, would produce anywhere from $25,000 to $30,000 a year, where 15 years ago, that would have produced $80,000 a year. So assuming, for example, we just take a simple illustration, you want to achieve $1 million when you retire. Now, we're going to use an 8% return over that period of time. Historically, the stock market has produced 10%, but I'm using 8% because it's a little bit more conservative. Now, if you are 40 years away from retirement, let's say you want to retire at age 65, you're age 25, you would only need to put aside $3,860 a year or $325 a month. If you are 30 years from retirement, that figure jumps from $3,800 to $8,800 and almost $30, or $736 a month. It more than doubles by just delaying 10 years saving for that retirement goal. If you are 20 years away from retirement, and this is the issue that a lot of individuals are finding themselves in today, they may be 45 and maybe juniors going to college and they're saying, oh, I'm 45, I'm getting pretty close to retirement, and I've got kids in college. If you are 20 years away from retirement, if you wanted to have $1 million, you need to put aside almost $21,852, or let's call it $22,000, and over $1,800 a month. So you can see by waiting to put aside or start a savings program, how much more you have to put aside to catch up. So the worst situation you could find yourself in is being 10 years away from retirement. You have to put aside over $69,000 a year, or close to $5,800 a month. So you can see from this illustration the magic of compounding. And obviously, the earlier that you start, the better off you're going to be. And it points to one of the problems of procrastination, which is kind of relates back to our New Year's resolutions. A lot of New Year's resolutions they looked at are things that people procrastinate on doing. Hey, I know I'm overweight. My cholesterol count is high. The doctor says I need to change my diet. I need to exercise. Or maybe you're in a situation where you have a lot of credit card debt, or you're facing a situation where kids are going to be approaching college age, or you're closer to retirement, and you've been procrastinating. This is illustrating the dangers of procrastinating, because it is so much easier if you start out at a much younger age. $325 a month is a lot easier than $5,800 a month.
All right, so having moved through that one, what is the next step? Because we had the goal of implementing steps, monitoring, I assume, staying on track.
Actually, John, step six is becoming accountable. You need someone to hold you accountable. It could be a spouse, it could be a friend, it could be a parent, a relative. It's just like, you know, when you go in for your annual physical and your doctor says, hey, how are we doing on the diet? How are you doing on the exercise program? Are you eating healthy foods? Are you de-stressing? You know, these are the things our doctor holds us accountable. It's likewise, it's the same when we are trying to be very successful with our New Year's resolution. You know, you set aside these goals that you want to accomplish at the beginning of the year. It's all great. But what happens if you start to maybe lax off? Okay, you're snacking more. Okay, you're doing things. Well, I skipped exercise today. I was too tired. You need to have somebody that holds you accountable. And if I was to say, if I was to summarize all of this, the best thing that you can have, whether you have New Year's resolutions, whatever they may be, financial or physical or emotional, whatever they are, you need to have a plan. You know, think about it. You wouldn't take a trip or go someplace or drive someplace without directions, without a map, or today GPS from your phone or your car. So it's very important that having a plan is sort of something that guides you along the way. You're at point A, you want to be at point B, and this is going to help get you from point A to point B. You have to have a roadmap or a plan to help you get you there.
Well, we've talked about plans in the past. Jim, maybe we need to review that a bit, because the plan has to be thorough. It has to be successful. I've always said good plans need to be simple. They need to be universal and comprehensive, meaning that everybody understands them. They're easy to follow and that they work for every circumstance that you're trying to apply it to.
Yeah, and one of the things that we use in the financial planning profession, and we call it a six-step process. The first one is to start out and define the relationship between, let's say, yourself and a financial advisor or financial planner or accountant, whoever you are that you're working with. You need to define that relationship. What's your responsibility? What is that person's responsibility? That's step number one, because you have to develop a trust or a bond. It's just like choosing a doctor for the first time. Step two is very much what we've been talking about getting into financial shape, is you've got to gather the data and you have to set specific goals. This is one of the big issues. We take a lot of time is trying to get clients to get specific about setting up their goals. I mean, they may come in and go, well, I want to retire. Well, if you want to retire, when do you want to retire? At what age? And then we go, okay, if you want to retire, what age? What kind of income do you want to have? What kind of lifestyle? Where are you going to live? What are you going to do? What are you going to do with your retirement? So these things are very important in that step of not only setting goals, but being very specific about those goals and getting as much information as you can so you really understand and provide valuable input into achieving that goal. Now, step three is really to analyze and evaluate the financial status of an individual. And as we talked about setting goals for getting into financial shape, that's really one of the first steps you want to do is analyze where you stand today. What is your income? What is your expenses? Do you have money left over at the end of the year or at the end of the month? And then also, where are you on the financial scale? How much money have you put aside? How much do you have in your retirement plan? Do you have personal savings? Do you have an emergency account? So you evaluate all this information. And then once that's done and you know where you want to go, then you have to develop a specific strategy to achieve those goals. And it's got to fit you personally. Because it can't be the financial planner, your broker, your advisor, your CPA, whoever that person is that you're working with, it can't be them that basically develops the strategy. They will help you, but it's got to be something that you both agree upon, because that's the only way it's going to work. And then five, once you do that and you agree upon, okay, this is something we can work, this is how we're going to achieve it, then you actually have to implement it. And that is very important. A lot of times people put together plans, but they never get around to really putting the money aside, following through with the budget. And then finally, even if you're doing all those things, you have to monitor the plan. And there's going to be feedback because things change. You may get a raise, a person gets laid off, there's an illness, there's something that changes in your plan financially, or heck, you have something like a bear market, as we did at the beginning of the last decade. And also, look what we went through, the financial recession of 2007, or what they call the Great Recession. There's all these external events that can happen, that can change and alter those plans. So you really want to monitor the feedback on that. You know, it's like anything else. If you're on a diet, you want to be weighing yourself. Okay, I want to lose 10 pounds. Where am I? It's the same thing. I want to retire at age 65 and I want to have X amount of dollars. Where am I? How successful have you been? So basically, John, if you want to talk about getting into financial shape, one of the best ways to get into financial shape is actually to have a financial plan.
Now it's time to go to our weekly case study. As with all case studies, they're based on real life examples. Names are changed to protect the privacy of the people involved. And we do have slides available on our website that accompany this presentation, so you can actually look at the subjects we are discussing.
And this week, we are going to introduce you to Dave and Darla Disaster. And so, as we take a look, a little backgrounder here, Dave and Darla Disaster. Dave was sort of a self-taught individual investor. He began day trading in the late 1990s. That was very popular back then, if you can recall. Got overexposed to tech stocks, the dot-com bubble in the early 2000s, which diminished much of Dave and Darla's investable assets, because they really took a beating when you were heavily invested in a lot of these internet and tech stocks. As a result, Dave began investing in what he considered safer asset classes like oil and financials. In the hope that Dave and Darla would pay for their three children to go to school, they decided to sell Dave's stock options and buy speculative properties in 2007 to create passive income that would cover the college expenses. Sounded like a good idea. The only problem is they were buying on leverage with low interest rates that weren't good mortgages and buying at the peak of the market. Unfortunately, Dave and Darla again were hit very hard by the 2008 recession. Their income plateaued and they were forced to sell both the rental properties and their home because they could not keep up with the payments. After these experiences, Dave and Darla decided they no longer wanted to be invested in the markets, and they pretty much rode out much of the bull market staying in cash because they were, like many people, were afraid to do everything. I mean, folks, if you take a look at the statistics, $1.9 trillion over the last 16 years has gone into the bond market and zero into the stock market, net. So they weren't different than many people out there. So give you a little bit more color about Dave and Darla. Dave was a project manager, worked for the same company for many years. He's receiving an excellent salary and benefits. He has handled the finances and has long been able to provide for his family and making sure they have the best of everything since he did not have much growing up. The story that many of us have in profile here on the program. He's sort of tired, however, of his commute because they had to move to an area where they could afford to buy and wants to retire soon and do the things he wants to do, spend more time with his family, play more golf. And Darla has been a stay-at-home mom raising their kids, but it was very important. They wanted to have a good education, so she needed to go back to work again. And so basically, as we looked at their financial plan, a couple things that really stood out. It was very important that their kids get a good college education. And I introduced them to our 2+2 concept where, you know, the kids stay at home, go to a junior college the first 2 years to cut down on the cost, and if possible, go to a local university if it was possible to get the degree they were trying to pursue, or a state college, because going out of state in a private education just was not realistic for the disasters given their current situation and expenses. They also wanted to gain greater control of their finances and purchase a new home and eventually be able to retire. Their essential budget was roughly about $67,000 a year. Discretionary spending, close to $24,000. Their total spending, $90,400. The good thing is Dave's salary was $125,000, surplus of about $35,000 a year. We took a look at their retirement budget and got into the weeds here in terms of what would change differently. Essential budget would go from about $67,000 to $58,000. Discretionary would go from about $24,000 down to $20,000. So the budget would be $78,000. Social Security would be about $45,000. So we had a deficit of roughly of $33,400. Now we look at the assets. Primary residence, $335,000. Dave's retirement plan was $425,000. Darla's retirement plan, $67,000. They were sitting on a lot of cash. Most of their investments were cash, given the experiences they had of the bursting of the tech bubble and the financial crisis. So cash was $102,000, so they had roughly $600,000. Total assets, $929,000. Liabilities, $25,000. Net worth, $904,000. So the challenges that we had were poor investment decisions by investing in what I call the flavor of the month, the fad, whether it was day trading into tech stocks in the late 90s or buying real estate rentals in 2007. There was no budgeting. And also there was a lot of impulsive purchasing habits and assets like real estate. It was like, okay, this is the hot thing right now, the hot investment du jour. And they had very little in retirement savings, given the fact they wanted, given their age and when they wanted to retire. The goal was gaining financial control. Dave and Darla relocated to an area with a lower cost of living, but increased commute time to over an hour. So this was one of the problems. They couldn't afford to buy closer to work because it was just too expensive, but they did want to own a home. So there was a longer commute time. Darla found work to help provide more income because up until that time, she was a stay-at-home mom. The budget was used to pay off debts And after becoming debt-free, Dave and Darla saved for that down payment on a home. Unfortunately, this goal could not be met, and their children ended up paying for their own college education. As a result, their children attended school while living at home. Hey, you know, things could get worse, but at least their children will have less debt when they get out of school instead of being able to go away to a private university or a college and stay at a dorm. The retirement was delayed until Dave and Darla's late 60s to provide more time to catch up for savings for retirement. So, John, here was the thing. Unfortunately, it was not having a plan. It was sort of not having an investment philosophy, getting very much caught up with what I call the investment du jour or passing fads in the market. But in the end, I think they're going to be okay. It's just going to take much longer to reach their retirement goals.
Well, since the whole program here was dedicated to the idea of New Year's resolutions, one of the resolutions that people always make is that of losing weight. Some people succeed, others lose a little and then go right back to where they were. They get discouraged in whatever diet they find themselves. Our guest on the program tomorrow is Dr. Amy Myers, The Thyroid Connection, Why You Feel Tired, Brain Fogged, and Overweight, because it could be that you're fighting uphill against something else when you talk about losing weight. It's coming up on the program tomorrow, Dr. Amy Myers.
In the meantime, on behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income, and we hope 2017 makes all your New Year's resolutions come true and successful. Until we talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.